Welcome to another edition of Mormonland. I'm managing editor Dave Noyce. I'm joined by senior religion reporter Peggy Fletcher-Stack. Hello again, Peggy.
Hi, Dave.
A recent Pew Research report reaffirmed a growing trend. Americans, especially younger ones, are abandoning organized religion. It's a phenomenon that cuts across denominations and is expected to continue. But what about in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? How is this missionary-oriented faith faring in its efforts to recruit and retain members? Independent researcher Matt Martinick recently completed a global survey examining the faith's growth and retention rates. He joins us today from Colorado Springs to discuss some of his findings. Matt, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. Hey, Matt, tell us, for starters, tell us about your research, what you studied and how you got your information.
Yeah, definitely. So I've been interested in studying the growth of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints really for about 17 years now. And in terms of actually doing research related to that, it's been about 10 years now. I've been doing that with the Camora Foundation and also with my blog, ldschurchgrowth.blogspot.com. Now, in terms of what you're referring to with the surveys I've been collecting, that's been something I've been doing since 2012, and thus far I have gathered a total of 6,816 responses as of October 13th. And these are surveys that were completed by ordinary members of the church. Some of them were church leaders, indicating some of the open-ended responses on the survey, and also returned missionaries as well.
Okay, so let's just ask with a basic question. Is the LDS Church growing?
Yes.
Okay. Matt, what about the rate of growth? It's certainly slowed, though, right, from what we used to see, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of looking at what metrics we can use to track growth, we can look at metrics like the number of members reported by the church at the end of the year that's reported in the annual statistical report. We can look at the number of congregations, number of stakes, which are organizational units that group congregations into specific geographical areas or in some occasions by language. So we look at those metrics. That's information available to the public, and that provides a lot of insight into growth. And with those metrics, what we've seen is a decelerating rate of growth that's been decelerating for about 30 years. It's been really about the duration of this deceleration that we've been seeing with almost all of those metrics. The most stark one that we've seen recently is a decline in number of convert baptisms, which has gone down about 100,000 a year compared to what it used to be back in the late 90s, was when we reached the all-time high of 330,000 convert baptisms for the worldwide church, whereas this last year was more about 230,000. So
yeah,
pretty significant.
And that's with more missionaries, right?
That is true, yes. And even at this point, most recent figures, I've seen about 65,000 missionaries serving worldwide that are full-time proselyting missionaries, and we're seeing fewer people join the church.
So, Matt, tell us, where is the church growing the fastest, and where is it stagnating or even declining?
Yeah, so in terms of the places where the church is growing most rapidly, and so first of all, I want to put out there, we can see sort of artificial growth in terms of people moving to new developments. We see that especially in Utah and in places where there's a high number of Latter-day Saints. So I'm going to speak to your question specifically with conversions to the church. And we're seeing the most rapid growth in West Africa and in Central Africa currently. In most of those countries, we see annual membership growth rates of about 7 or 8% or higher a year. And we're also seeing fairly steady growth in terms of number of members added to the record in places, in some areas in Asia as well, but not so much in other areas of the world where we've seen the actual number of members on the records. Those growth rates decelerate quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. What about Latin America?
So in Latin America, we've seen annual membership growth rates decline from 5 to 10% a year in the late 1990s. To most countries, we're seeing annual membership growth rates between 1 and 4% for most countries in the region. Now, we've seen a significant increase in the number of members, and so it's much more difficult to have a higher annual membership growth rate when you have a much larger base that you're working off of. But one thing I wanted to clarify with that is that although we're not seeing much membership growth, we're seeing a pretty significant increase in the number of active members in certain Latin American countries like Peru and Bolivia.
Hmm. Where is the church even declining? Are there places the church is even declining? Like I've seen some places in like Europe, maybe Germany.
Yeah, well, in terms of decline, again, it's kind of how you define that. Are you saying, you know, percent of the members in the population, is the population, is the percentage becoming less members of the church, is the actual numerical drop in the number of members or active members? And really, this kind of depends on where you are. But one of the things that we see is that in places, especially in the United States, we'll see people move away from an area, and that'll result in a void in leadership and active membership. And so that's something we see. That's something that's happened for decades. But in terms of looking at the church on a country level, places where the church is growing the slowest or in decline, I wouldn't say there's really anywhere where the church is actually in decline, but there are many places where the church is just stagnant. And so a lot of that would include places in Northern Europe, particularly places like Denmark. In Denmark, we haven't had really any noticeable growth in terms of number of active members or even members on the records for close to 40 years now. And in other places, we've also seen really stagnant growth, like Puerto Rico is another location like that. And in Asia, we've seen also Japan and South Korea are almost pretty much stagnant as well.
So what factors did you find? Are there some common factors that prompted growth or stagnation? Or is it just country by country?
You know, there are... It's both of those things, what you just said there, Peggy. So, and I think we have to look at this both in terms of intrinsic factors. So these are factors that the church has control over. Things like where they send missionaries, what kind of policies are in place for what kind of teaching and preparations required for people to join the church. And then we also have external factors where it's things like, you know, how interested the general population is in religion or what are some common societal views on the church. Those are things that also affect growth too.
So is it, are countries which are primarily Christian, like Philippines or countries of South America, are those places easier for Latter-day Saint missionaries because people are already Christian?
You know, it usually that is the case. And a lot of times what we see, though, in those situations is that the general population is more receptive, but the actual interest they have in the church might not be that straightforward or genuine. So it might be more an interest in just the church's view is very American in a lot of areas of the world, and that can be a big challenge because it can make it difficult for people in different countries and different cultures to feel like they can join the church and not have to feel like they're becoming American in the process, or they view the church as an American institution. On the other hand, it can make people more interested in the church, maybe because they like America or they have a positive regard for America. But at the same time, that's really kind of a secondary reason to be looking to the church, and that can result in really not a genuine conversion, perhaps, right? So. But I would say, I mean, one of the clear findings from the Return Missionary Surveys was really just the regard of the church as an American church as being quite a barrier to growth in many areas of the world.
So you mentioned this already, Matt, but given where growth is the fastest and slowest, is it your conclusion that missionaries are being properly deployed to certain areas, or should some adjustments be made to where they are sent?
You know, I would say that some adjustments to be made to where they're sent would be definitely a really good idea, and it's something that I think that'll happen in the foreseeable future, is my opinion. But with what can be done to accelerate growth in the church, a lot of it has to do with policies like the Center of Strength policy, where most of the church's resources are placed in terms of missionary resources, are placed in areas where the most members live, as opposed to going to new areas. Now, that also depends on where you are. And in West Africa, for example, the church is very proactive in going into new areas. Like in Cote d'Ivoire, the number of cities of the Water Branch has increased from about 5 or 6 10 years ago to about 55 to 60 presently. So we've had some areas where we've seen a significant proliferation of the church being organized in new areas, and that's something that we quite often see with more rapid growth. But I would argue, in terms of the importance of pre-baptismal preparation and local member involvement in the teaching process, those are really critical issues no matter where you are. And those are things that have improved quite a bit, especially in places like Hong Kong. One of the surprising findings from the surveys that I did was that Hong Kong's convert retention rate was one of the highest among missions surveyed. I had 15 responses from return missionaries from Hong Kong, and the average convert retention rate was 63% 1 year after baptism, which is pretty good considering the worldwide average is about 50%.
I was going to turn to retention, Matt, next, because your study of retention rates where you looked at – well, one thing you looked at was a year after baptism, which you just referenced. And you found that in the U.S. it's 50%, and if you took all the other countries around the world and lumped them together and looked at the – I think it was like 49%, almost the same. Did that surprise you?
It did surprise me because historically countries like the United States have had higher retention than the worldwide average. And so we've seen a significant increase in convert retention rates, at least for 1 year after baptism, which is what I was looking at specifically in these surveys. But it also, there's a lot of variability too, not just by country, but by location within each country. Or even in the same city, I've had responses from members and return missionaries where you can have very similar geographical characteristics, demographic characteristics, and you have one congregation that has 20 convert baptisms in 1 year, and most of them are still active today, and another one that's had zero convert baptisms for several years. And wow. So those are the ones that I found especially interesting because it seems like the conditions in terms of outside the church are really the same, and that would argue that something's going on internal in the church for some areas being much more productive than others.
So where are the countries that retention, you mentioned some is the strongest and some that it's, and where are they the weakest?
Yeah, so overall, and speaking in general terms, the highest convert retention rates are in Africa. And that includes places, especially where the missionary force is primarily made up of local members. So places in West Africa in particular, I mean, probably the quintessential example of very high convert retention is in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where, I mean, typically they're convert retention member activity rates are about 80-90% in most places in the country, which is extremely high.
After just 1 year, though, or over or a longer period?
Overall. Yeah,
wow.
It's not uncommon for in places in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. I'll just say DR Congo because that's a mouthful. In the DR Congo, where the number of people attending church exceeds the number of people that are on the records. And that's something that's been maintained for decades, not something that's a new development.
Hmm. And so where are the places that it's weakest?
So the place, in terms of the quality of data I have, where I could say with pretty good confidence this is the lowest convert retention place anywhere, is Uruguay.
Hmm. And it's what, Matt?
And
what's the rate?
What I found with the surveys that I received, Uruguay had a fairly large number of responses. Let's see, what was the actual number here? It was... 33% was the convert retention rate 1 year after baptism, and the member activity rate for Uruguay is probably close to 10%, which is really abysmal. So very low, and all of those surveys I've received have been really since about 2010, and I have a couple dozen surveys from Uruguay that I received from return missionaries, and the ones I received that were in Spanish or in English or that were from local members are all kind of told the same story. So. Yeah. But, I mean, it makes sense because you have a country that's really the most secular country, I'd argue, in South America. And it's also a country where people are still very much nominally Catholic. And so that tends to create a lot of challenges instilling the type of behaviors we see with people who join a faith and are very active in a faith that demands a lot. And the actual number for Uruguay was 29 surveys I got from returned missionaries that were in English.
So the church, it seems like, especially under President Hinckley, and certainly there were other efforts before, really started to try to stress and adjust to retain the converts and members. Do you think some of those strategies are working? Do you see that working in the numbers that you're seeing?
I do. I think there has been some significant improvement And there are certain places where we've seen that improvement to be, I would say, almost night and day difference, and other places where it seems to have really been largely unchanged, unfortunately. So Uruguay, Paraguay, those are some countries where we really haven't seen much positive improvement, unfortunately. But other places like the Philippines, we've seen some significant progress there.
So what could the church do better to retain its members? What are the recommendations that came from your return missionary survey?
You know, and I actually received a lot of some excellent suggestions, and I wrote about this on my blog earlier this year, I think it was back in February, and I provided some of the feedback from the return missionaries and implemented that into some suggestions that might be helpful to address some of these concerns. So based on looking at the survey data collected as well as my experience doing this type of research, what I would suggest would be some very helpful strategies would include things like having the local bishop or branch president be the person who interviews prospective members for baptism, not the full-time missionaries. Another suggestion I think would be very helpful is for the church to organize some sort of methodical strategy to have local members move to areas where there is not a church presence to establish church presence there deliberately. Historically, the church, the way it expands to new areas is by really the fortuitous events of members that move somewhere for work purposes or employment, or I mean for education, and that's how the church goes to new countries, which, I mean, that works, but it's oftentimes a very slow and disorganized process. So those are some things. Also, I mean, in terms of really stressing pre-baptism preparation, I mean, I don't understand why it can't be more like months that people prepare to join a church as opposed to weeks. I think that's something that we see quite clearly from the survey responses. One of the things that's been especially exciting for me to see is to see surveys filled out from one mission president compared to another mission president to the same mission, and to see some significant improvement, or to the opposite, some significant regression in progress with retention member activity rates based on policies implemented by that mission president, including things like really not having full-time missionaries take over member responsibilities, including longer, like more, you have to attend church maybe for two consecutive months before you're even considered to be eligible for baptism. Requiring those type of things are oftentimes very important for developing that. But there are some things that are going to be very difficult to change, such as the culture in the church where missionary work is this thing that you do for 2 years as a full-time missionary, and it's seen as just, you know, just something that happens during that time and not a lifelong pattern of gospel living.
So you've talked about Africa and especially West Africa, where things are really happening. And I know you wrote once that, for instance, you talked about Sierra Leone, which, like, the second largest city in Sierra Leone had like three stakes organized within 22 months or something, I think you wrote. That country, the capital there, is now getting a temple, as you, by the way, predicted, one of several that you got right this last conference, that would be named as a temple. So how do temples help with retention, and how?
They definitely can, and I think the reason why they're very helpful for retention is that there are certain standards that members have to meet to go to the temple. And so if you have members that are meeting those standards, they're much more likely to be active in the church. And in Sierra Leone, for example, I had known from senior missionaries that serve in Sierra Leone that there's been a big emphasis on temple work and family history work. And, in terms of looking at that Sierra Leone case, too, what's also interesting is the Ebola outbreak was something that really helped to accelerate the growth of the church there, because the full-time missionaries were removed and all the local members had to do everything themselves. And that really, I think, was a big impetus towards the church getting to the point now where we're going to have the seventh stake created in Sierra Leone later this month in Kenema. So, I think the argument, and in terms of your question about how temples relate to retention and member activity and growth, I would say, the temple, I would say, definitely helps with that. But I would argue really the preparation people make to go to the temple is what's really behind those improvements that we may see with convert retention member activity.
Mm-hmm. Do all the organizational changes that church is making, buttressing their strength there in Africa, does that make a difference too, like creating new districts and new stakes and creating a new area, you know, those kinds of things?
You know, the process to create new units is not one that happens in a day or in a week. Oftentimes it's many months or years in preparation and planning for creating new units. So we'll see. I think we'll have a better idea of how some of these policy changes and institutional changes, how they'll impact growth rates. Probably in the next couple of years, we'll see if there is a significant difference. But I can say for 2019, we're having quite a significant year for new unit creation. We've had over a net increase of over 300 wards and branches, about 150 of which are in the United States, which is the largest we've had in the United States in, you know, many years. And these aren't just Spanish branches or young single adult branches. Most of these are family wards. And based on the survey data I've collected even most recently, it doesn't seem like there's a push to create wards with fewer active members. Rather, it seems like there is indeed a genuine increase in active membership in most areas of the United States as well.
So any predictions for new temples to be announced?
Well, I usually get into that mode about a month or so before general conference. So, and this last one, I got pretty lucky. The conference before that, I was not so lucky. Those were a lot of unusual announcements, given just how isolated and small the church is in a lot of those places. But in terms of additional announcements that I could see in the foreseeable future, I could still see Utah getting additional temples in places like Heber City, for example. I could also see more temples being announced in countries like Brazil, and also in Africa as well, and in the Philippines. So I think really where we'll probably see additional temples announced are in a lot of the places they have been announced, or in countries with similar situations when they're getting to about 10 to 15,000 members and they're fairly isolated from the nearest temple. So that's where we've seen a lot of the recent announcements are countries that fit that mold. And that's not something new either in the history of the church. That's generally about when countries get their first temples, when they get to about 10 to 20,000 members. So that's not something that's new with President Nelson announcing a lot of these announcements. But we are seeing more frequent announcements in places that are very isolated, which is something new. But the bulk of the announcements are pretty typical for what we've seen for the church overall.
Are you going to put your hometown of Colorado Springs on the list again?
I will, yes. We'll see. I mean, the Denver Temple is, it's just pretty sporadic, sometimes very well utilized, other times not so much. But Colorado Springs is one of the cities in the United States with the most stakes without a temple. We have 5 stakes here. And it can be difficult to get to Denver for some transportation issues. So, that's something we see with temples in the United States is once we get to about 4 or 5 stakes, it becomes a much more likely contender to have a temple announced. And if that nearest temple is at least moderately busy, then that usually suggests that a temple will probably be pretty likely to be forthcoming in the near future.
So what does your research show about finding new potential converts? We talked about retention, but are there better ways to find new converts?
You know, that's a great question that I'm sure every mission president of the church would love to get more information about. but, you know, what I have seen from the survey data, I mean, one of the things that's fascinating to me is I've had some member surveys, just especially this year, we've had, and again, I don't know if this is a really representative sample, but I've had at least a couple dozen surveys this year where we have, wards and branches in the United States that are having 10 to 20 convert baptisms in the last 12 months, which is really surprising me. But the thing that it seems like these higher baptizing units have in common is that the members do all of the work, and the missionaries are just there to teach and do their thing in terms of preparing and making sure people are ready for baptism. They're not the ones that are jump-starting that. This is all the local members doing that. And I've seen this in some places like South Florida and Michigan, and the retention for those has been really quite good. A lot of times it's been about 50 to 80% for 1 year after baptism, which, I mean, really that's still, I think, fairly unacceptable. I think it's not unrealistic to say 80 to 100% of the converts should be retained 1 year after baptism, but still that's a big improvement from where we've seen. But in terms of if we really reached a point to where things have become more effective, I think we'll have to wait and see what kind of long-term trends hold in terms of unit creation and perhaps if membership starts to accelerate again. But thus far, it's been on a steady decline to only about 1.2% annual membership growth for the worldwide church. So,
Matt, let me ask one last question. It has less to do with data and research and a little bit more to do on a personal side for you. What does spending – obviously, you're spending a lot of time studying the church's footprint around the world. What does it do for your faith personally? Does it inspire you? Does it get you down? Does it make it seem monotonous and routine? I mean, what does it do for you personally?
Right. Well, I'm a clinical psychologist by profession, so I love looking at numbers and really trying to figure out what's going on by using a lot of data, right? But in terms of how, because I'm an active member of the church, and in terms of how it affects my own testimony, I mean, I'm a big proponent that, you know, good inspiration is based on good information, as President Nelson put it a year or two ago. And I think I actually see a lot of, you know, I think it's important to have accurate information on what's really going on. I think it's exciting for a lot of the successes, and I think it's excruciatingly frustrating to see some of the failures of what we've seen with the growth of the church. But I would say it reminds me of the allegory of the olive tree in the Book of Mormon in Jacob chapter 5, where I imagine, you know, the Lord of the vineyard saying, "What more could I have done for my vineyard?" And it's just this grueling process where trying your best and still not getting the results you necessarily want to get. And that seems to pretty much describe the missionary program for the church as a whole, I would say. But I'm optimistic that things will improve. I believe that the missionary program is probably the next area that we're going to see some major changes to in the church. Based on the other changes we've seen, it's definitely in need of that to really help to implement effective policies that really help to develop strong community-based resources that not just benefit the members of the church, but their communities around them, as opposed to, you know, where the church has that now, where that isn't always the case. So,
well, Matt Martinick, we certainly rely on your information, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And thanks to Peggy Fletcher Stack.
Always a pleasure.
And to our producer, Sarah Weber. We remind our listeners that they can keep up on all the happenings in and about the church by subscribing to our free weekly newsletter. Just go to sltrib.com to sign up, and we'll talk again next week on Mormonland.